Today on Bruce Springsteen Sings the Alphabet, Jungle Land!
I was going
to
say,
start the show.
Sings the Alphabet.
It's the only podcast online where we talk about Jungle Land. I'm joined, as always, by Rob Carmack, the faithful co-host. And we are bringing you one of the greatest songs ever written today.
JB coming out swinging.
Am I showing my hand too soon?
Well, can we back up and just say, if this is your first time to listen, the whole idea of this podcast is we talk about every single Bruce Springsteen song in alphabetical order, one by one. We happen to be heading toward the end of the J's, which puts us at Jungle Land. So we've done all the songs previous to Jungle Land in alphabetical order, but now we've reached Jungle Land, which feels a little bit like we've made it. In fact, I'm already sad that this episode is going to be. This is one of those episodes where, like, when it's over,
what's on the other side of this?
How are we going to not talk about Jungle Land? So
what's on the other side of this?
So this song comes from the 1975 iconic record Born to Run. This is the final track on Born to Run. And
is it the best record that has ever been written?
I mean,
I'm not saying it is, but it could be.
It could be.
It could be.
I think a very strong case could be made for that. But I think this song, if you were going to make that case, I think you would have to use this song as part of your argument for sure. So yes. This song comes from that album. The whole album has 8 songs on it. And this is song number
eight. Eight of the greatest songs ever written.
And this song clocks in at just under 10 minutes long. So we're not messing around here.
Because it's an opera. It's a whole movement. This song is the stage play to adolescence.
Oof.
It's a travesty that's never been nominated for a Tony. This song deserves a Tony.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda needs to bow down to this song. So
start it with me, guys. Hashtag Jungle Land for Tony.
We're only, I think it's ineligible like by 40-ish years.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's fine.
This is a post-rules world.
There's no rules anymore. So this song is number 13 on Rolling Stone's top 100 of Bruce Springsteen songs. Yes.
Speaking of rules, they threw out all the rules when they wrote this one.
I was going to say, I think 13 is low. I think this not being in the top 10 is a problem. But anyway, to each his own, whatever. So
I've been having this thought all day. Like, I don't know. It's probably not my favorite Bruce Springsteen song, right?
Okay.
But how can I not say that it's the number one Bruce Springsteen song?
It is certainly one of the definitive Bruce Springsteen songs. You know, like it's a staple. You know what I mean?
You can say that a song speaks to you more, but you can't say that he's written a better song.
Mm. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I guess that's the discussion of this entire podcast. But it's this song. I think this song demonstrates for many reasons. I think this song demonstrates the greatness that is the songwriter Bruce Springsteen. It is so well constructed. It is so well plotted. The lyrics are perfect. It is superbly written at every possible level. Ending this record with this song is exactly what needed to happen. So
yeah,
here's what we needed to do.
I had this weird. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. You had a weird what?
I had a weird thought today. I've never had this thought before, but I was listening to it like 4 or 5 times, getting really psyched up. And I don't know if you noticed, but it worked.
Yes. Also, you're drinking coffee beer.
Yeah, this song is a shot in the arm. So, and so is coffee beer. So. When I listen to this song, I think normally when I listen to a Bruce Springsteen song, I'm like, wow, this is a deep cut. It's one of the best songs I've ever heard. You know, like this is his, 335th song on the list or whatever. And it's a great song. But then you hear this song and you kind of think like, you know, he really mailed it in there for a little while. Like he was capable of this.
Yeah.
All along.
Well, and we've already seen an early incarnation of this with Incident on 57th Street, right? And in fact, these two songs get compared a lot because they're both very big. They're rock opera ish. They have lots of characters. There's like a crime element to it. But I think, and I love, I think when we did our end of the year top 10, I think, or top 5, I think Incident was my number one song. So I mean, I'm on record as loving Incident. This song is like, if Incident evolves and gets better, that's what this song is. So I realize we're just gushing. Like, we're just sitting here talking about how great this is. Let's actually get into this.
It also makes me kind of mad that he's never written a musical called Out in the Streets.
I think eventually there will be a musical made out of Bruce's music. Like, not unlike how Billy Joel. Yeah, I mean, that'd be great. But, you know, he can't do everything. Or can he? I think he can.
Because the dialogue would just be in... You'd have these amazing songs with, like, these just sweeping movements and incredible lyrics where you see all this feeling, and then you get to the dialogue, and it would just be these two characters just, like, gruffly nodding at each other. Isn't that the thing, you know? That's the thing. That's just the way the cookie crumbles, you know? It's the way it shakes out, you know what I'm saying? That's about it. and then like, the feelings really come out as soon as the saxophone comes in.
I think you're gonna have to go to decaf beer. I think that's gonna need to happen. You got all so charged up. So let's get, because there's so much. This is a very, very rich song.
Let's go. Just right into it.
We have to just go into it. So
I'll quit cutting you off. Let's go.
You're fine. So it opens up. The Rangers had a homecoming in Harlem late last night, and the Magic Rat. This is I love this line. And the Magic Rat drove his sleek machine over the Jersey State line.
Woo.
Okay. The Magic Rat drove his sleek machine over the Jersey State line. That one line is the most Bruce Springsteen thing that has ever been committed to paper. You know what I mean? You got the cool nickname, you got the mention of a car, and it mentions the Jersey State line all in one shot. So you got the Magic Rat is now the opening character of the song. It says, barefoot girl sitting on the hood of a Dodge, drinking warm beer in the soft summer rain. The rat
that
pulls...
That line.
Oh, it's great. Ah. The rat pulls into
that
town.
That line is youth. Sorry.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. The rat pulls into town, rolls up his pants. Together, they take a stab at romance and disappear down Flamingo Lane. And by the way, it should be mentioned that the whole time, the piano is just killing it. Like, there's this piano that beautifully serenades the whole song, and it's wonderful. So
it's sort of like this Elton John-esque sort of ripoff. Awesome piano, which is like these really cool.
Yeah, you're right. It is a little bit reminiscent of Tiny Dancer, the piano part, in all the best ways. And so you've got two characters now. You got Magic Rat and you got the Barefoot Girl, and then now it says, "Well, the maximum lawman run down Flamingo, chasing the Rat and the Barefoot Girl, and the kids around here look just like shadows, always quiet, holding hands. From the churches to the jails, tonight all is silent in the world as we take our stand." Down in Jungle Land. Can we just have a moment where we recognize like how beautifully written the song is? Like, I don't even know. Can we just be silent for a minute and just be like, sit in the greatness of what this is? From the churches to the jails, tonight all is silent in the world as we take our stand down in Jungle Land. So there's a setting, there's characters, there's these two people who are running from the lawman. The kids around here look like shadows. It is painting a fantastical picture of what would otherwise be an ordinary Jersey night in the summer.
Well, and it's so, the action is all so well written. This is almost like blocking directions for adolescents. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not a story. It's showing you, it's saying like, okay, and now Magic Rat. All right, get in the car. All right, come across the state line. All right, Barefoot Girl's waiting here on the car. All right, you guys are going to hook up. Y'all are going to try and fall in love. So just speed down the street. Cue cop, lights blazing, flying out. Now there's silence because like all the conflict has left the scene. And so what do we have here? We've got kids like shadows being quiet, holding hands, keeping their heads down from the churches to the jails, from the good kids to the bad kids and everything in between. There's quiet. There's silence in the world. As we take our stand, right, this youth in revolt.
Yes.
So he's saying everything's quiet. The conflict left town. And then it's like, wait, what is waiting in the shadows? What is in the churches? What is in the jails? Youth in revolt. As we take our stand down in Jungle Land. Oh, my gosh.
It's so good. And then.
We ain't even in it yet.
Well, and then that's what I was about. Like, at this point, the music begins to swell. The whole band is in. And it's gone from being a piano ballad to a full-scale rock opera. And now it's the Midnight Gang's assembled and picked a rendezvous for the night. They'll meet neath that giant Exxon sign that brings this fair city light. Every single person who grew up in America knows exactly what he's describing. There's a parking lot. There's an abandoned parking lot with an overlit sign above it. And that's where we're all going to be tonight. That's the rendezvous tonight. And so then it says, man, there's an opera out on the turnpike, which I love that he's written a rock opera and he refers to the whole scene as an opera. There's an opera out on the turnpike. There's a ballet being fought out in the alley up until the local, which by the way, the idea of an opera on the turnpike and a ballet fought in the alley is talking about sort of the elegance of the non-elegant, you know, like he takes these things like people doing kind of lame things, but he's giving them a sort of poetry. You know, a ballet being fought out in the alley. That's beautiful.
Right.
The juxtaposition, which you live for, is just like coding this whole thing. So
whether it's your gangs or your jocks versus your dweebs and your greasers, mm-hmm. or whether it's young love or whether it's like burnouts, you know, smoking pot in the alley, like whatever it is, like there's this dance to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whenever you're adolescent, you think you're doing something so original, and you are, because no one's ever really done it, but right, but everyone's also done it. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, every night the lights come down, and like, no matter what city you're in, you can sort of almost cue it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the ballet, there's the opera out on the turnpike, and you hear it. You hear the cars racing, right? And then there's the ballet being fought out in the alley. You see up cue the burnouts with their plastic baggies walking to the alley, and the kids holding hands and trying to sneak a kiss, and like,
yeah,
it's all scripted, but it's all so new every night.
Well, I assume you've seen Dazed and Confused, the Richard Linklater film. That to me is a film version of this kind of thing, because what it does is it takes this idea of just teenagers just hanging out, and it reveals like the ritual behind it. Like, this is not new. Mm-hmm. Like, we've been doing this, and like all the way down to like the way freshmen are inducted into high school, to like the route you cruise and where you go to buy beer from the guy who's not going to check your ID. Like, all the things are, like you said, they're scripted. They feel original, but this is a very old tribal tradition that you have joined in on. And
they are original, because who knows what could happen tonight.
That's right.
Nothing will, but something could. You know what I mean?
Something always could, but almost never does anything actually happen.
Right.
And
that is like, that's what's beautiful.
Yeah.
Is that we're all showing up for the could.
That's true. Yeah. We're all,
that's what's great about adolescence. When we're adults, we're like, whatever, I'll just watch the DVR. Because I know that that's all that's in store. But when we're kids, we're like, something really could happen.
So, and then after the ballet being fought in the alley, it says, until the local cops, Cherry Tops, rips this holy night. Which I love. It refers to the night as holy. You know, like the ballet, the opera, the holiness. He continues to ascribe big mythological language to ordinary small things. And that is, like, I would argue, lyrically, Born to Run is perhaps the best work that Bruce has ever done, because he pulls all this poetry together to describe ordinary teenage American life. So then it says, the streets alive as secret debts are paid. Contacts made, they vanish unseen. Kids flash guitars just like switchblades, hustling for the record machine. I love that line, too. Kids flash guitars just like switchblades. The hungry and the hunted explode into rock and roll bands that face off against each other out in the street, down in jungle land.
Yeah, man.
Jeez. I mean, anybody who writes the song, you don't have to write more songs. This can be your song. You know what I mean? Like, if he had stopped right here, this song, I would argue, would stand the test of time, and people would still talk about how great this song was. But he's Bruce Springsteen, so he continues to work. So then it kind of goes into musically what sounds like the bridge, where it says, in the parking lot, the visionaries dress in the latest rage. What?
Before you get there,
holy
double guitar solos, Batman.
Oh, you're right. There's some really great guitar going on here.
It is insane.
Yeah, because the kids have now flashed their guitars like switchblades, and so now you have to have dueling guitar solos.
Yes.
And so,
I mean, and it is just... And the guitar solos are very, like, this day and age guitar solos. Mm-hmm. They start off with that just, like, strumming the chord with the down notes on the piano, you know?
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, you just have, like, these two racing... I mean, it sounds like two cars racing down the turnpike. Guitar solos. And it is just par for the course, but something could and does happen.
Well, and this goes back to... Yeah, it goes back to the thing that we've talked about so many times on this podcast, which is that Bruce is so good at pairing music with lyrics and creating an entire tapestry, or like basically painting an entire picture for us, both with music and lyrics together, to tell you exactly not just what's happening, but how it feels to the people it's happening to, you know?
Yeah.
And the sound of the piano and the guitars and like how it swells and all these things, like he is doing everything he can to direct an entire play that only exists inside your mind, you know? And it's beautiful.
And vocally, he's doing stuff that he doesn't do anywhere else here.
I mean, that's true. Off, yeah.
It's just the pretty piano, and it's that really gruff Bruce voice. And in the next verse, there's like some really cool melody stuff we'll talk about when we get to it. But like, man, and those guitar solos, every bend like has a snare hit. It's like, I don't know, it's orchestrated like choreography.
The amount of time, the amount of time they must have spent on this single song in the studio must have just been mind. I mean, I know from like the books that this whole album was agonized over. But I mean, I can only imagine what it must have felt like for them to be in the studio with this song, constantly feeling like we really have to do this again, don't we? You know, like, because you know Bruce, like he mixed this album as if his life depended on it. And so, and that's
kind of did.
And it kind of did. Yeah. As far as his career was concerned. And so, I think this song is sort of the best argument for why that needed to be. So,
and at this point in the song, we're at full speed. Yeah. The song does not start off this fast.
No, it starts off with that tiny dancer piano. And now we're at like ripping guitar solos and full band movement.
Flying.
It's probably also worth noting that this is a different band than what was used in albums 1 and 2. Like at this point, Max Weinberg has come in. I might be wrong, but I think was Roy Bittan is Roy Bittan playing piano on that's a thing I should know. So, that should be in the notes. Yeah,
I think it is.
Okay,
we can pause. He definitely could not have done this with his first drummer, like who's great. It's a lot of fun. You know, Vinny's a lot of fun to listen to. But this record would not have happened with him on the drums.
No, the tightness and the precision that is Born to Run could only happen with Max Weinberg on drums.
Right, and Max has to hold it down while like hold back some of the lyricism, and he's got to like anchor some of the guitar work. He's got to like keep clearance. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much happening that Max has to hold it down.
Yeah, it's so well done. It's so well done. And so then the sort of bridge part after the dueling guitar solos is in the parking lot, the Visionaries dress in the latest rage. Inside, the Backstreet Girls are dancing to the record that the DJ plays. Lonely hearted.
Let me pause you.
Yeah.
Well, no, let's go ahead and finish it. Go ahead and finish it. Sorry.
Lonely hearted lovers struggle in dark corners, desperate as the night moves on. Just a look and a whisper and they're gone.
All right. So in the parking lot.
Yeah.
The Visionaries dress in the latest rage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so me and my friends wore eyeliner and girl jeans and baggy band t-shirts and had faux hawks in the parking lot of whatever church or whatever big box store had gone out of business that we could turn it into a venue.
Yeah.
And my parents were like, God, y'all are so dumb. And they stood in the parking lot in their leisure suits and their cool gold chains in front of that big box store that went out of business that they could turn into a venue while their bands played.
Yeah.
And their parents were like, God, y'all are so dumb. And their parents had sock hops in the parking lot. Well, you know what I mean? Like, this is the same thing. Generation after generation, we do this. We do it exactly like this. And this is the, like, when every artist talks about where they started, it always goes back to they always had that weird guy who was a little bit older, who was just cool, who let him borrow records, who dressed the weirdest. And it's always like in the parking lot, in that venue that they all hung out at. And that's what they reflect. That's what all the great artists of every generation sort of reflect back on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
all the stuff that happened in their lives. But then also, like, man, there was this scene. There was this art scene, you know. You know, whether it was like our town was too small for a scene, so there's just four of us, or you know, oh, they're battling scenes, and I was a part of the, you know, whatever it was. There's always this scene, this parking lot scene, where the Visionaries dress in the latest rage, whatever it is that makes their parents just wild. You know, that's the thing that they dress like.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes in and talks about inside the Backstreet Girls are dancing to their records that the DJ plays. And when he says DJ plays, he does something melodically with his voice where he goes down real deep and it is cool. Because he's just doing melodic stuff with his voice that he doesn't do as much. It's just less of a bar rock band where he's hollering over everybody.
Yeah.
My buddy Corey Cox, I used to play bass for him. He was in the studio with this guy recently and they were listening to a song for some inspiration. And the producer said, man, Corey, I wish you could do that with your voice. And Corey said, I can. I just, you only ever see me playing bars. I'm just trying to holler over everybody. And I think that's sort of what Bruce is doing here. Is like, he's like, I'm not in a bar right now. This is going to be a big vocal production.
Oh, for sure. And this is one of those songs. If you were a Bruce Springsteen tribute band, I would imagine this is one of the more difficult songs to pull off because probably you are playing a lot of bars. And like the people probably don't have the patience for what the song does. But.
Right,
but it's such an essential Springsteen song, you know, and so after that part comes this epic epic Clarence Clemons sax solo. I would argue.
And the song slows back down.
Yes. It
goes into this just group. I mean, if everybody in the room is not trying to make a baby, then they're not, they're deaf. You know what I mean? Like, it just slows down.
It does. And in fact, in Clarence Clemons' autobiography, Big Man, he writes to me about this song, specifically about the solo. He writes, to me, that solo, the Jungle Land solo, sounds like love. I love that. I love Clarence so much for saying that. And this is the definitive Clarence Clemons solo. I would imagine probably when after Clarence passed away and Bruce was looking for his replacement, I would imagine the dominant question must be, can this person pull off the Jungle Land solo? You know, like, because I know, and he talks about this a little bit in his autobiography, Born to Run, about when Jake came in to audition. And one of the things about that was, like, you don't improvise. These solos are the song. Like, you don't get to make the Jungle Land solo your own.
Yeah.
Thing. You do.
Jake got yelled at.
Yeah, he did. So, which I love. That's one of my favorite parts of the book, because it kind of gives you insight on how Bruce, like, thinks about the audition process when people come in.
How long is that solo?
It's, like, almost 4 or 5 minutes. I mean, it's very long. It's half the song almost. And so... maybe, I don't know, maybe it's like 3.5 minutes. It's very long, though. It takes up a big chunk of time. And it's the definitive... I mean, when you think about Clarence Clemons' work, like, there's that solo, and then there's all the other stuff. Like, this is the solo that makes Clarence Clemons the big man, you know? Yeah. In fact, at the very, very first time I ever saw Bruce Springsteen in the E Street Band, Clarence Clemons was there. I mean, he was still alive. And they did this song, and I got to hear Clarence do this solo.
That's incredible.
It was insane. And I wish I could go back and know what I know now and hear it again in that way.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, the first time I saw Bruce do this song, he did it. And the most recent time I saw Springsteen in Jersey, they did it again, and Jake did the solo, and he did it great. I mean, and that because that's the thing. And you know, when Jake does the solo, there has to, maybe not now, but maybe specifically at first, there has to be, like, this awareness of everyone in this room needs this to sound like when Clarence did it, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's how the song sounds. The solo is an integral part of what makes the song what it is.
Not only is my job on the line, but also souls are on the line.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, if you want to make the universe angry, don't nail this solo. So yeah, that's sort of so you have the sax solo, and then at the end of the sax solo, it goes way, way back down, and it's very muted, it's very small, and then it gets back into this is the lyrics, beneath the city, two hearts beat, soul engines running through a night so tender in a bedroom locked, in whispers of soft refusal, and then surrender in the tunnels uptown, the rat's own dream guns him down as shots echo down them hallways in the night. No one watches when the ambulance pulls away or as the girl shuts out the bedroom light. So something terrible has happened, you know?
Yeah.
So you've got the bigness. So it starts out, these two people meet up. There's, you know, and like it sets the scene. There's this big sort of epic thing, and something happens in the middle of the sax solo, and now it's back to just the two of them. And something has happened.
Yeah.
There's an ambulance, and his own dream guns him down and shots echo down the hallways, and no one watches as the ambulance pulls away. So it's like this almost unremarkable thing that's happened here. And
well, the first line, you know, you have the Rangers coming back. So the Rangers in Harlem. So it's Army Rangers from Nam, right?
Right.
I guess. And then Magic Rat driving across the state line into Harlem. Just, woo, man, it's going to be a big night. And everyone watches him leave with the girl.
Yeah.
And love is happening, right? They head out on the road, and there are operas on the turnpike when they leave. And now it's quiet, and no one watches when the ambulance pulls away.
Yeah. So
Rat, ostensibly Rat in the ambulance. Rat was gunned down by his own dreams, and the ambulance pulls away, and, like, no one watches.
And it's unremarkable. Like, this big epic life is snuffed out, and no one, yeah, like, what felt like a big epic life, it turns out no one's even watching. No one's even paying attention. Right. And then the final verse is, outside the streets on fire in a real death waltz between what's flesh and what's fantasy. And the poets, this is my favorite line in the whole song, and the poets down here don't write nothing at all. They just stand back and let it all be. So, like, mm-hmm, just that line of the people we need to have something to say are silenced. they have nothing to say here. There's no, there is no commentary. There is nothing about this makes it the epic thing that the Magic Rat believed that it was. And then it says, in the quick of the night, they reach for their moment and try to make an honest stand, but they wind up wounded, not even dead, tonight in Jungle Land.
And this verse is just him bringing it up vocally. Mm. It's almost like the band is attached to the bottom of his vocal cords, and the only way he can get the band louder is to just bring them up with his voice. And then it goes right back down. And you have, I mean, you have the sort of piano parts that you hear in a musical, sort of that you know, whenever you like, there's a song of longing in a musical.
Yeah, of course.
And it's like, won't he be-da-doop, love me, be-da-doop. You know, like they do like the little trills on the piano. That was a terrible impression. But like, that's what's happening on the piano right there. They are nodding to like lament in musicals. Like they are saying, hey, this is a cue. Like, don't you guys know from Rodgers and Hammerstein or whatever?
Yeah, they call that the I want song. Like every musical, if you watch like a Disney princess song, there's always movie, there's always the song about what the Disney princess is longing for, you know, like I'm trying to think, my daughter's favorite movie right now is The Little Mermaid, and there's the song really early where she says like, I want to be where the people are, I want to, you know, like that, like every Disney princess movie has that the I want song. And so
there's those little piano trills in between their like, during their, so in all those songs, there's always like phrase, deep breath, and deep breath is like the piano trill.
Yeah.
You know, the piano is as if to say like, ah, and then next phrase, it's all, and ah, the way that they nod to that in this song, I think is really smart. And then Bruce goes into, from that very like lilting piano part into just these huge, just bellowing screams, you know?
Yeah.
Well, or not screams, but hollers.
It almost feels like he's lamenting the injustice of something when he says, and the poets down here don't write nothing at all. Like, that's when to me, that's when he feels most emotionally invested, you know, when he says that one part.
As if he falls to his knees during that part.
Yeah. Well, and if you see him do this live, like, the way he does his hands and the way he just, like he's acting it out. Like, somewhere in his mind, he sees it, all of it, every single time he does this song, I believe. So
The really liner powerful. Notes might as well say in parentheses, male lead fall drops to knees, hands in the air.
Yeah, for sure. Man. And in fact, Rolling Stone magazine, of course, has written about this song. And so Rolling Stone says this. It says, quote, Springsteen once described Born to Run's grand finale, i.e. Jungle Land, as a, quote, spiritual battleground. He was referring to the song's narrative, but he could just as well have been talking about its creation. Recording began in mid-1974 alongside Born to Run, but the sessions hit a wall, prompting Springsteen to change studios. A Spanish-flavored intro was cut. There was a Spanish-flavored intro. Numerous takes were made and discarded, and most famously, in a 16-hour fit of inspired obsessive compulsiveness, Springsteen led Clarence Clemons through every note of his soaring sax part over and over until it was perfect. So Springsteen wrote that sax solo and Clarence played it. And so it says he moved him through every single note over and over until it was perfect. Quote, all we could do was hold on. This is Clarence speaking. He says, all we could do was hold on, smoke a lot of pot and try to stay calm, which is funny because Bruce is very clearly on record as being very anti-drug for his band, but I get the impression he turned a blind eye when Clarence wanted to smoke pot. So that,
especially if it was like a 16-hour recording session. Okay, dude,
go get
right and let's finish this.
I'm not gonna pay attention to whatever it is you're gonna do when I leave the room, but you better get this right when I get back. So and then it says the result was a 9-minute epic, a tale of outlaw love gone wrong, beginning with Suki Lahav's searching violin and Roy Bittan's jazzy piano, and building into a miniature rock opera, peaking with Clemens's magnificent extended solo, which was in fact edited together from pieces of takes by Springsteen. So like, when you listen to it on the record, it's a cut and paste job, but if obviously like Clarence learned how to play it all together before they went out on tour, because like anybody who's ever heard them do the song live, like Clarence had it perfect. And so so anyway, the song was a labor of love in every possible way. And I think it's super interesting also that it ends the Born to Run album, because the Born to Run album, the whole Born to Run album is about breaking free, right? It's about getting out of places like this. And so the whole pattern of the Born to Run album moves from a place of hopeful escape, like Thunder Road and Born to Run, to all the way back to finding yourself right back to where you started again. You know,
yeah.
Like the Magic Rat doesn't want to still be in this town. He wants out, but he can't get out. So the best thing, the closest thing he can get is going over the Jersey State line for the night to see the Barefoot Girl. And so, and he ends up dying over there, you know? And so it has sort of this, the cycle of despair kind of woven into yeah. it. And I cannot believe Bruce wrote this song when he was as young as he was. And it's, I mean, it is a masterpiece. This song is a straight up masterpiece.
The thing that blows my mind is like how long it took to write and record this.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a part of a project that has been like redone that many times.
Yeah.
And come out better for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like you get to wonder, like, you begin second guessing everything and you begin thinking like, we're not even doing anything well. Like we would have been done a long time ago if we were doing anything right here. So
I'm pretty confident there was probably a moment where he like listened back to this song and was like, what even is this? Like, this doesn't make sense. And someone looked at him and said, no, this is brilliant. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to have been a fly on the wall. Maybe not for all 16 hours, but you know, at certain points where you're like, he's creating something. He does not know how special it is yet.
Right. Or the guy who's like walking in the studio, like, hey, Bruce, leave him alone for a little bit. You're being abusive.
Yeah. You're being a little bossy.
I bet he loves that.
I think that's good. I think one should call me that from now on.
I just can't imagine. I know that if I spent that much time working on this, anytime I heard one of the transitions, I would just delete it. You know what I mean? Like, because I feel so unsure by this point.
I know, man. I mean, it's beautiful and it's haunting and stirring. It's every single thing I want from a Bruce Springsteen song. It's so good.
It's more than I want from a Bruce Springsteen song. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So on that
note, I don't require this much from a Bruce Springsteen song, but man, does he give it.
Yeah. So on that note, how many Sleek Machines would you give this song?
I'd give it 7 if I could.
I was going to say, is there any question? Are we not going to like bump our heads on the ceiling on this? Like what's the highest number we can go to? It's like, I mean, obviously it's five Sleek Machines with the asterisk of, If we begin adding numbers, we'll move this one up. This
one is just the maximum amount.
Yeah, the maximum law.
This isn't a 5. This is open tag max value close tag. Like this is just like
yeah,
whatever value is assignable. We'll just let that be a.
Yeah, man. I wish this is one of those songs. Like when we're done, I'm like, we can't be done with Jungle Land. Like no, I refuse to be done with Jungle Land. I'm gonna filibuster this.
I'm probably gonna quit after this one.
I wouldn't blame you.
I got nothing left. From.
Is this your favorite song that we've done so far?
Well, I don't know. Like, is this better? Is this song better than Born to Run? You know, or is it better than some like really sweet deep cut? I mean, I can't sit in the car and sing along to this song. This song is a movie I've got to sit in and watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
When it gets to is it better or not better than Born to Run, that at that point you're just dealing with personal taste, like how it hits you. Like I don't think you can argue quality difference. I think both of them are masterpieces. It's just,
I mean, is this like numerically the best song that Bruce Springsteen's written? Yeah. But is it like better than any other song, or is it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
is it
I
more,
get you, man. Yeah.
Do I like it more? I mean, yeah, this is definitely the best song he's written. Come on, are you kidding me?
It's
this is incredible.
You'd be hard pressed to find a song that's more well constructed than this song. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this song is insane. This song is to be studied.
Yes.
This song deserves a Tony, you know?
Yes, for sure.
It's got sweeping movements.
This is one of those, like, every time I've seen Bruce Springsteen and he didn't do the song, there's always a part of me that thought, like, I mean, I get it because it's 10 minutes long, but I really would have loved it if he had done Jungle Land. And so I would
never endeavor to play the song live. That would just be a train wreck.
It's perfect. I mean, when you hear the E Street Band do the song, it is so, so, so good. In fact, there's a live cut. If you have the Live in New York, either CD or DVD box set, it's so good. It's so much fun to watch him do this song and just like fully embody what this song is doing. And I don't know. I mean, this song is... If you need to make a case for why he's a great songwriter, like I don't think you need to go any further than this song, even though you could, you know. But yeah, man, this song is a masterpiece. And I think at this point, I don't know. We'll reevaluate at the end of this year. But I think so far this is, in my opinion, the best song we've talked about. You know, I don't think it, and I mean, I put this one just above Incident on 57th Street because that song is very special to me as well. But
yeah,
this one, I said it before. I think this song is a more well evolved song than Incident on 57th Street, which is a phenomenal song.
I mean, it makes me rethink like Human Touch, Independence Day, you know, like
you just don't get those songs. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, like growing up, even.
Yeah,
like growing up's a great song. Growing up does not deserve to be a five. This is what a five is.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Like you've got your fives, and then you've got your like super fives, which is what this is. Yeah, and to me that's what makes Born to Run the masterpiece that it is that it has several songs on there that are just like not just great songs, but essential. Like these songs need to live for 1,000 years kinds of songs.
When Rolling Stone made their list of top 100 songs, they also ranked the albums.
Oh, okay.
And the score was like a point score, like based on number of songs. So it was like each song got points, and those like points divided by songs. I don't know exactly how they got the score, but basically like each record has a score. Mm-hmm. So like the lowest scoring record is We Shall Overcome was a 0.14. They rated that one weird though, because I think it was like how many songs, songs on the top 100 list. Born to Run had all the songs on the top 100 list. So it, like the score for top, like as it compared on the top 100 list was 73.6. Whereas the score that they gave out of 100 possible points for Darkness on the Edge of Town was 49.4.
Oh, that's interesting. So, like, is Meeting Across the River in the top 100? I mean, that does not necessarily need to be something we know today because we're not there yet. But because when you said all the songs, like, I thought, like, I don't think Meeting Across the River is on that list, but it might be.
Yeah. I mean, all 8 songs are on the top one. It's not even low. It's like 42.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Okay. Well, we will get back to that. We'll get back to that one very soon. All right. Well, that's it. I don't even know what to do with myself now. I feel like I just need to kind of sit here, lay my head down.
It's like that was a whole thing.
I know. And like, we got to follow this with the next song, which is Just Like Firewood.
Just Like Firewood.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, I tell you what, everybody stop whatever you're doing right now. Stop and go listen to Jungle Land if you haven't already. So
two or three times.
Just do it. Just be in that song with yourself for a little while. All right. So we'll see everybody next time. We're going to talk about Just Like Firewood. And until then, everybody have a good, you know, couple days or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. See you soon. Down in jungle land.